Okay, welcome back everyone to our Experience Shabbat Shir. Just so we all have some sense of time and what we're going to be covering over the next several weeks. So this week, as you hopefully know, the topic is about Lechem Mishnah, discussing the two loaves of bread that we are supposed to and obligated to have at every single meal at Shabbos. Over the next 4 or 5 weeks after that, what I want to discuss is the interesting topic of analyzing and dissecting what each Shabbat meal is meant to be about and what it's meant to accomplish, right? That is to say that we have an obligation not just to have 3 Shabbat meals, but in theory, almost 4 Shabbat meals, which we'll spend some time discussing. That is that we have 3 Shabbat meals on Shabbos proper, and we also have the obligation to have a Malava Malka on Saturday night. And so I want to spend time discussing each of these separately and also discussing all of them as a whole. So that will be the next several weeks. That will probably take us up to, believe it or not, up to the Yom HaMorim, to the high holiday season. We'll probably take a short hiatus over the high holidays not have this year, but God willing, we'll be back once again following the high holidays. But that's just to give you a sense of what the next couple of months are going to look like. Okay, so we are going to be discussing Lechem Mishnah this evening. The obligation of Lechem Mishnah, the obligation to have 2 loaves of bread at every single Shabbat meal, comes from a pasuk in Shemos. The pasuk in Shemos says in Perek Tet Zayin, "Vayihi biyom hashishi laktu lechem mishna shnei omer leechad." Right, so nothing to do with Shabbos at all, but rather that the Jewish people were collecting the mun. And the one connection this has to do with Shabbos is that it happened to be that the mun that the Jewish people had in the desert, it would fall every single day. There was enough for the Jewish people to eat for the entire day. And right, there's this whole idea that many of us learned when we were younger, that the notion that you couldn't take any extra for the next day, and if you took extra, then it would go bad and it wasn't good, and it showed you had a lack of emunah, a lack of faith. But there was one day where there was an extra portion that would fall, and that was on Friday. There was an extra portion of food that would fall on Friday so that the mun would not have to fall on Shabbos, and so that you'd be able to have enough food to last you, not just on Friday, but for Shabbos itself. And it's interesting that the pasuk itself calls this Lechem Mishneh. It means literally like a double portion of the mun, or the double portion of like the omers that would fall, and that would be what the people would eat for Friday and Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos on Kuf Yud Zayin Mabeis takes this pasuk and infers exactly this halacha. Amar Rabbi Abba, b'Shabbos chayev adam levtzua al shtei kikaros. For every single meal on Shabbos, one is obligated to have 2 loaves of bread. Dechtiv lechem mishnah, because of this pasuk, the pasuk that we just read, because there's the pasuk that says that they receive 2 portions of man on Friday, and these 2 portions of man indicate for us that every single time we have Shabbos meal, we should have a remembrance to the 2 portions, and therefore we have the Lechem Mishnah, the 2 loaves at every meal. Okay, what is the nature of this obligation? So if I were to ask you or anyone off the street after just giving that brief introduction, understanding that the pasuk says that this obligation of Lechem Mishnah comes from the Torah verse, so you would assume that this would actually be a Torah commandment, which is interesting, right? We don't really... It's sort of qualitatively different than all the other Torah mitzvahs that we've spoken about thus far, where we have the positive commandment of Kiddush, we said we have Havdalah, and then we said we have the Malachos. We never really came upon the mitzvah of Lechem Mishnah and tried to figure out where that is categorized, so that's where the tension is going to lie. So there's a machlokas, there's an argument among the poskim trying to figure out whether this is a rabbinic or a Torah commandment. The Taz holds very famously that this is a Torah commandment, and the Magen Avraham and others hold that it is actually a rabbinic commandment. Hi, Sema, welcome. I'm just going to mute you. So there's a machlokas if it's a rabbinic or a Torah commandment. Now, that said, that is all one really needs to know to get a basic comprehension of what Lechem Mishnah is all about. Everything that is going to come from here on out is where things begin to get a little bit, for lack of a better term, trippy, and where things become more in the Kabbalistic realm, and we're going to now go through many of these Kabbalistic aspects of what Lechem Mishnah is, what we're told it's about, and then try to bring it down to earth. Yeah, Alan?
Weren't there 2 breads in the Beis HaMikdash?
There were 12 breads. That was the Lechem Hapanim.
Well,
good. Okay. But very good. We'll get there. Very good question. Okay, so let's begin now trying to understand the other aspects of Lechem Mishnah. So if you wanted to understand what it is exactly that Lech HaMishnah is supposed to be, or what it's supposed to look like at our table. So the Gemara tells us that we have this obligation to have Lech HaMishnah. But how does that obligation work? So we know as Jews that the rabbis 2,000 years ago, or rather, God gave us the Torah, then the rabbis of the generation after that made it a little more complicated, and every single generation the rabbis would like to make things a little more complicated and add a few more steps every single year. That's a joke, but that is sometimes how it seems. But the Ramah does write that you would think that all you have to do is just make a hamotzi lechem in a aretz on the challah at the Shabbos table, and that's all you would need to do. But says the Ramah, no, that's not all you need to do. You actually need to worry about how you're going to place the breads. In other words, which bread at which meal are you supposed to be eating? So the Ramah very famously says that at night you're supposed to eat the bottom challah, and during the day you're supposed to eat the top challah. There's a huge question of how this actually works, because we know that there's a concept of in ma'avirin ala mitzvahs. We don't pass over on the mitzvah. So during the day, that's great. So if I'm eating from the top loaf of challah, I'm not passing over anything. But at night, if I'm supposed to make a bracha on two challahs and I'm supposed to eat the bottom one, then how is that supposed to work? Because I'm going to pass over the top one. So there are some who actually explain that. What are you supposed to do? You take the bottom challah, you place the top one over it, but you put the bottom one a little bit closer to you to make it feel like that's closer, and therefore you're not going to worry about passing over any of the mitzvahs. Okay, so you'll say, so the Ramah's getting a little complicated, a little technical over here, but we do try to follow this Ramah. Where does he get it from? None of the sources that we've seen thus far, from the Pasuk or from the Gemara or from the other commentators debating about where its origin is from, tell us that there's such a specific regiment in terms of how we're supposed to be holding and making a bracha on the bread. Says the Ramah, al pi Kabbalah, we learn such an idea from the Kabbalists. The mystics teach us that this is how we're supposed to be doing this. Now, what's so interesting is that, again, and normally in halacha, we don't like to include Kabbalah. There's something called halacha, there's something called Kabbalah, there's nice things to do when it comes to Kabbalah, but very rarely do we say that that's a part of halacha. But nonetheless, over here, the Ramah says, no, that the Kabbalah of how to make the bracha on the challah, that is something that we should try to be following. We'll see more on how this continues to evolve. The Gra, in his Biur HaGra, actually says that this Ramah is totally, you just ignore it. Why should you totally ignore this? Because he says that we should not only be cutting one of the loaves of challah. The Gra says that every single meal you should be cutting both loaves of challah. So if you have two loaves of challah at night, and two loaves of challah on Shabbos afternoon, and two loaves of challah at Shal Shudis, you should end up with a lot of challah at the end, because each challah should be cut into. That's why some people hopefully are using smaller loaves. There's no obligation to have one of those like big Rebbe challahs. Some people like to have that. No obligation to do that. Probably better to have two smaller challahs, at least according to the Gra, and cut into both of them. That way you can fulfill this idea. Again, according to the Ramah, there's not necessarily anything wrong with eating both the challahs. Enjoy both of the challahs. But the Ramah seemingly, was coming from the perspective that if you're going to cut one, this is how you should do it. But the Gra, again, says you should cut both challahs. The Shari Tshuva, and now this is where things continue to evolve and continue to escalate. He says, how many challahs should a person have at their table? So we've been getting off easy so far by saying we only need to have two, and then we saw some people say you have to eat both, and some people say you only have to eat one of them. The Shari Tshuva quotes the opinion of the Arizal, that we should have 12 loaves of challah at our table. That's 12 loaves of challah should be at our table. He does say you're not obligated to eat all 12 loaves. The way he actually explains it is that what you should do is you should have 12 small challahs. They should all be stacked, one row of six and then another row of six on top of them. And then he says you should take the two in the middle and you should use that to make your bracha on. Where does this notion of 12 loaves of challah come from? He doesn't say explicitly, but what Alan pointed out a moment ago is that it probably is somehow linked to the Lechem HaPanim. The Lechem HaPanim was the bread that the Kohanim used to bake every single week in the Beis HaMikdash. How many loaves of Lechem HaPanim do they bake? They used to bake 12 loaves a week. And we'll see that there are other connections of the Shabbos table to the Beis HaMikdash. So the fact that there is bread in the Beis HaMikdash, and the fact that the Arizal says that we should be having 12 loaves of challah, the obvious connection, I believe, would be to say that we're trying to do this to emulate what used to happen in the Beis HaMikdash. The Vilna Gaon, again, the Gra, commenting on this idea in his Sefer Maaseh Rav, that goes through many of the customs and many of the ideas that the Gra used to teach, he was aware of such a custom, aware of such an idea of people saying that you should have 12 loaves. He said, that's ridiculous. We don't do that. What does it mean, the notion of having 12 loaves? Well, actually, what he says, because I believe this all originated from the Zohar. The Arizal was quoting the Zohar, and so the Gra tries to translate now what the Zohar actually meant for us. According to him, he said very simple. If you remember, what did the Gra say? How many loaves of challah should we be having, should we be eating at our Shabbos table? Two, and we should eat both of them. Now, if you take two loaves of challah at three meals, right? You have night, day, and Shal Shudis. So that's six loaves of challah. And if you're supposed to be eating into them in each meal, that means you're going to cut each of them in half. So if you cut six loaves of challah in half, how many loaves of bread do you get? 12 loaves. Says the Gra, that's what it means, 12 loaves. You should not have 12 loaves at every single meal, but rather, if you count up all the loaves of challah that you've broken into, you'll have a total of six loaves, divide them in half, because you cut into all of them, and that will equal 12. But not that you should have 12 loaves at each single meal. Okay, so that's one layer of understanding how we're supposed to be treating Lecha Mishnah. What about covering the challah? Why do we cover the challah? So everyone, I'm not even going to call on anyone, because I know what everyone's going to say. Everyone's going to say we cover the challah because we don't want to embarrass the challah. And while that sounds ridiculous, and if any real skeptic or cynic out there will take that and laugh at you, the truth is that is what the Torah says explicitly. The Torah says that why do we cover the challah? Because we don't want to embarrass it. What does it mean we don't want to embarrass it? Well, it actually is a real halachic mechanism that he bases himself off of. What he's saying is when we don't want to embarrass it, it means that we make the bracha on the grape juice first. Why do we have to make the bracha on the grape juice first? Because we make kiddush first. Kiddush does come before hamotzi. Technically, there is a real order of how brachas are supposed to come. We should, if in a vacuum on a Sunday evening, if we're having wine or having bread, you would make the hamotzi first, and then you would make the hagafen. However, since we have something called kiddush that comes before hamotzi, so therefore you end up making the hagafen first. We don't therefore want to embarrass the challah, which really deserves the bracha first, and therefore that is why we cover the challah, so as not to quote unquote embarrass it. What's interesting though is that while everyone, all the skeptics and the cynics out there, and people who like to hold themselves on high horses and assume that they could just laugh at reasons like this, most people have no idea what the other two reasons are. There is one reason to cover the challah, and that's all about embarrassing it, but there are two other reasons that come up in the Gemara. In Psachim on Kuf Amud Beis, the Gemara in Psachim on Kuf Amud Beis is where this obligation or this custom seems to originate to cover one's challah. And the language in the Gemara in Shabbos is that we should be covering the table. We should be covering everything that's on the table so as not to. Take a step back. The actual language of the Gemara is that really we should not bring the table out until after Kiddush is made. We don't do things like that. Back in the day, they used to have small tables they would bring in and out. We have larger tables, and so the custom for us, therefore, would be to cover the whole table. So what does it mean to cover the whole table, and why do we do that? So Tosfos, right there in Psachim, it gives two reasons why it is we cover, quote-unquote, the whole table, and he explains that it's not really the table, we understand it to be the challah, and there are two possibilities. The first reason he says, I'll read you the actual language, Anu regilin lefros mapal lekadeish v'hatam mefurash b'shiltos. So he quotes the opinion of the Shiltos. Beautiful. Why do we actually cover the challah? To make it clear that this challah, that this meal, is specifically meant to be almost like sanctified in a sense for the Shabbos meal. Like, you know, what's more exciting on the game shows? You know, is it more exciting to win a car, or is the feeling of knowing what's behind door number one, is that the most exciting feeling? So the answer is, yeah, once you see, you know, Pat Sajak winning, I don't actually know what happens on any of these game shows, but when they uncover the prize, that's the most exciting part. So says the first opinion over here quoted in Tosfos, that we cover and uncover the bread to sort of make a voila moment. Well, here you go, voila, this is the beautiful Shabbos meal that we have prepared for us, so as to signify that this is specifically meant to be for the Shabbos meal, and to make it clear through this demonstration. The other opinion, and this is a personal favorite of mine, and I'm a very small person, but in my mind this makes the most sense. He says as follows, Tosfos, V'yish Mefarish, there's another explanation why we cover the bread. Zecher Limman, we cover the bread because it's a remembrance for the man. Shelo Haya Yorid B'Shabbos V'Yom Tov, because it did not fall on Shabbos and Yom Tov. V'Haya Tal Milmala U'Milmata V'Haman Bein Taim. What would happen was that the dew would fall. There would be one layer of dew that would fall, then the man would fall on top of the dew, and then another layer of dew would fall on top of that. So what do you know? You have this man that is covered on that is covered before Shabbos, and since we're basing Lecha Mishnah all on the concept of man, right? We have two challahs because there were two mans on Friday, and so therefore he says we should cover it so as to signify, or rather, we do cover it to signify the fact that the man, when we received it, was covered itself. Those are the three reasons. One, because we want to make a voila moment. Two, because it's like the man was covered, so we cover the challah. Three is we don't want to embarrass the challah. Which one is the most important out of all these three? Well, the answer is that all of them are important. However, showing which one you follow will be very clear based on how one covers their bread. So, for example, when just think for yourselves, what do you do in your own homes, or what have you seen other people do? When someone makes a hamotzi, how do they make a hamotzi? So here are a few possible options. One is to be sitting at the Shabbos table. You make your kiddush, okay, everyone drinks their grape juice, beautiful, and then the challah has obviously been there covered. When do you take the challah cover off? Do you take the challah cover off right after you make kiddush? Do you take the challah cover off right after you wash and you're back at the table and you're ready to make a motzi? Or do you take the challah cover off not at all until after you make the hamotzi and you're ready to already be cutting the challah? Whichever one you do, even though I think most people probably don't realize it, and they either just do what they saw their parents do, or they do what, I don't know, some rabbi do. So it's all relevant and based on all of these three opinions. I personally, what I do is that I keep the challah covered through the bracha of hamotzi, and then I take the challah cover off once I'm ready to cut open the bread, to cut open the challah. Why do I do that? Based on the second reason in Tosfos, this idea that it's like the man. Because if it's like the man, that means that the covering has nothing to do with the kiddush. We should keep the challah covered as long as it's going to be just sitting there resting before I'm going to eat it. That means I should keep it covered either right up until I'm about to cut it, or right up until I'm about to make the bracha, or right after I make the bracha. That's when I take it off. If it's all about embarrassing the challah, then all you got to do is make kiddush, and the second you make kiddush, you just take off the cover, and you fold it away, and no one doesn't make a difference anymore. So there are several nafkaminos that I've heard, several practical applications to go through to understand what someone might be holding like in any of these three circumstances. Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, in one of his 10-minute halachot on Yom Torah, goes through like 9 of them, and they're all amazing. We don't have the time to go through all of them because we're already over time. But he does go through them over there if you're interested. Okay, a few more questions. How is it that one should be holding the challah? So there are a few possible options. We're just going to talk about one over here. The Torah says that when you hold the challah to make the bracha of hamotzi, he says you should be using all 10 fingers to be grasping both of the loaves. Why? What is that all about? So he says it's keneged yud mitzvos atulius bepas. There are evidently 10 mitzvos, 10 commandments that apply to the mitzvah. There are 10 commandments that apply to the food group of bread, and therefore it's only fitting that we should have all 10 fingers touching our bread to be thinking about that. Again, that seems to be so irrelevant. It's very nice that bread has 10 mitzvos, but why should that be relevant to the Lechem Mishnah procedure? Okay, that's what the Torah says. And he also points out that as a result of that, another reason why we would use all 10 fingers, or at least another number 10 to throw in the mix, is that there are also 10 words in the bracha of hamotzi. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech haolam hamotzi lechem min haaretz. There are 10 words in the bracha of hamotzi, and therefore another reason why one should take their 10 fingers and make sure they're holding both loaves of challah with all 10 fingers. Okay, fine, we're almost done. What about dipping the challah in the salt? Why in the world do we do that? That's like the number one question that families love to quiz their yeshiva son on when they come back from yeshiva. Oh, let's see, you really learned anything? Why in the world do I have to take the stupid salt every single week and put it on the table? What is this all about? So there are a few possible reasons, two in particular. The Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, lo yivtza ad she'evo lefan ha-melech. One should not begin cutting the bread. One should not really make the hamotzi on the bread before they have the salt in front of them. Why? So the Rama says, u'mikol makom mitzvah lehavi al kol shulchan melech kodem she'yivtzoa ki ha-shulchan domel le-mizbeach. Okay, now we're getting a little trippy over here. So every single table that we're establishing a meal over is representative of the altar that was in the Beis HaMikdash. And we know that there is always salt brought into the karbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, how can you not have a table that is like an altar without salt on it? So you bring the salt to the table because it's supposed to be like an altar. The Aruch HaShulchan has a much more practical understanding. Why do you have to have salt on the table? Because every time you're going to be eating something, you never really know how nicely was it baked, right? So if you bought it from a delicious bakery, you paid top dollar for the challah. Right? When I was an assistant rabbi in Memphis, there was a bakery there called Ricky's Bakery. They make the best any baked good. They're just incredible. And they would make this challah that was like cake. It was absolutely delicious. It probably wasn't even challah at that point because it was really like babka. But anyways, it was really, really good. So this you wouldn't have to be worried about so much. But there are maybe probably some people in some bakeries who don't make such good challah. And so the Aruch HaShulchan says, why do we have salt at the table for hamotzi? Because of the fact we wanted to make sure it tastes good. So in case it doesn't taste good. According to the Rama and the Aruch HaShulchan, neither one of these opinions say that you have to dip the challah in the salt. All they say is they have to have the salt on the table, right, to either make sure it tastes good just in case, or if, according to the Ramah, because there was always salt in the mizbech, so you have to have salt on your table. The Aruch HaShulchan, however, says, why do we dip the salt in the challah? Because that's what, again, the Mekubalim say. The Mekubalim say that we should dip the challah in the salt, because all Yirei Shemayim do things like that. People who fear heaven do things like that. Why? He does not explain. Okay, so with all of that said and all of that in mind, let's just try to take away one small message from all of this, and that is the message of trying to understand why it is that Lechem HaMishnah, which seems like such a basic, mundane mitzvah and should be so easy to do and it should be hard to mess up, how come there are so many additional aspects added into it, specifically so many Kabbalistic and mystical aspects added into it? And I think the answer is we have to go back and understand two things. Number one, why is the Lechem Mishnah so interconnected in at least two ways to the Beis HaMikdash? That is, we saw the 12 loaves of bread could be comparable to the Lechem HaPanim. And number two, why is it another understanding is that the Lechem Mishnah is comparable, or the salt that we dip the Lechem Mishnah in is comparable to the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash. That was number one. Number two, we have to understand why the Lechem Mishnah is so comparable to the Man. That is to say, why did the Gemara even have the opinion or the thought at the very beginning to connect Lechem Mishnah to the Man in the first place? And I think that the answer is that we have to have the following perspective on what Lechem Mishnah is all about, and by that we'll be able to understand what the whole picture is. I think that we have to, that what Chazal and so many of these other Rabbanim over the course of time are trying to teach us and trying to guide us in is the direction of understanding that challah is the most mundane thing you could imagine, right? A lot of people like to give this vart, this idea over grape juice, right? Why do we make kiddush on grape juice? We're trying to sanctify the wine, and wine is so base. There's nothing more base and so mundane than challah. It's literally flour and water is the basic components of it. It's such a boring thing, such a boring concept. It's like the most boring of all mundane things in the world. What Chazal are teaching us is that even that which is so boring, so mundane, so simple, even that we have to bring a sense of holiness and sanctity to. How do you know you have to bring a holiness and sanctity to bread? Well, look at all these aspects to it. Number one, the bread is like the man itself. Number two, we compare it to the Beis HaMikdash in so many ways, to many practices that we used to have in the Beis HaMikdash. And say, Chazal, we're treating Lechem HaPanim like that which is so holy, because this, in a sense, is a microcosm of what Shabbos is all about. We know Shabbos itself is all about taking all that is physical and making it holy. And we see that so clearly in the Lechem Mishnah, because we're taking that which is so simple and making it so holy. The message ultimately of the Lechem Mishnah is recognizing that that which is so mundane and simple can be sanctified so greatly, so that when we come out of Shabbos after three meals, that's when we're going to get to the Malava Malka. At the Malava Malka, we still should be washing, we still should have some sort of at least a small Seuda on bread, and that's the first opportunity for us to say we spent a whole Shabbos, a day of spirituality in which we saw that we could sanctify even the most mundane. Now let's take our first opportunity to sanctify the most mundane in this first meal after Shabbos. That's what Lechem Mishnah is all about. It's realizing that we can sanctify even the most base and simple thing to make it holy, let alone everything else in the world can we sanctify to make that holy as well. Everyone should have a great night and a Shabbat Shalom.